Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why My Lowe's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only, 5/8 through 5/14. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
All right, welcome back in. We're a week separated from the Super Bowl. We still got over a week to go until the Scouting Combine in Indianapolis. It's the MMQB Podcast with Albert Breer. There's a ton to get to. This offseason has a chance to bring unprecedented quarterback movement across the NFL. So that's where we're going to start with the takeaways for this week. My first takeaway is this is the way it's going to be on Tom Brady for the next 5 weeks. And we've already seen the pictures surface at the UFC fight with the Raiders owner, Mark Davis. We saw the tease for the commercial that caused all kinds of issues ahead of the Super Bowl. And you're going to continue to hear this over the next 5 weeks. You're going to hear he's connected to this team, he's connected to that team. And I'll tell you the reason why: he needs to have the Patriots feeling uncomfortable. Whether they're going to take him back or not, to make the market what he needs to make the market and to draw the best offer out of the Patriots, at least perception has to exist that there is a market for Tom Brady, a robust market for Tom Brady, and one that's going to get Tom Brady paid. And I've said this a few times now. To me, this is as much about respect as anything else. Brady's been willing to be employee number 12 for so long in that building, and I think over the years it started to wear on him. And going through that year to year and going through what he went through over the last 3 or 4 years has taken its toll. And I think that came to a head last summer when I don't think the issue was ever money. I think it was years. And my understanding of the whole thing was if they had given him something that was reasonable that took him through, say, the 2021 season, maybe they would have set up something where, and I think he would have been amenable to setting up something where he'd say, okay, this is when I'll be done. And having just the knowledge that he would be in a Patriots uniform till the very end, I think would have been very, very valuable to him. And now, because they weren't willing to give on years, the focus will shift a little bit to money because he was sent into a contract year by the team because they used the phrasing uncharted territory. And it doesn't sound like a big deal to me or you because we're not attached to it. We're not emotionally attached to it. So to anybody on the outside, you look at something like that and you say, well, of course that makes sense. He's going to be 43 years old. Of course this is uncharted territory. But if that's you and you've put 2 decades of equity into the organization and the organization is literally more valuable, way more valuable than it was when you got there because of you, you're not going to be buying any of this because you've put so much into it. And so I think as much as anything else, this is going to be about the Patriots showing respect to Brady. This is going to be about the Patriots showing belief in Brady. And unfortunately for the team now, because you've exhausted the contract and because you put him in this position in the first place, respect's going to happen via money. And so how do you do that? You know, I think that part of it's going to be interesting to watch. I think how badly Belichick wants Brady back is going to be interesting to watch. And I think until there's any sort of contact between the Patriots and Brady, you're going to see these sort of sly flirtations with leaving, flirtations with individual teams, random bump-ins, like that sort of stuff. I don't think that's going to ramp down over the next 5 weeks. I'm not completely convinced that at the end of all of this, that the Patriots' best option won't be Brady and that Brady's best option won't be the Patriots. I think ultimately that's what could bring them back together. But right now things aren't in a great place. You know, we'll see where it goes from here, but it doesn't seem like things are in a great place. And, you know, I think a lot of this is going to boil down to what the Patriots decide to do with the rest of their roster. And I know that sounds crazy, but they've got 9 of the 11 starters on defense this year are going to be 29 or older at the start of next year. And 8 of those 11 starters are going to be 30 or older. On offense, you've got Julian Edelman at 34 in May. You've got Marcus Cannon at 32 in May. And you've got probably their best young offensive player in Joe Tooney set for free agency in March. So there's a lot of just moving parts there, and so much of, I think, the Patriots' desire to bring back Brady will hinge on all of those other guys. If they decide to run it back with an older team one more time, there's no question that Brady will make more sense than anyone else. If they don't, if they decide it's time to rip the Band-Aid off, if they decide it's time to pull the whole thing down and rebuild it, then we are talking about something else entirely, and that would be, I think, when you see the Patriots just when you see the Patriots actually separate from Brady. Takeaway number two, Taysom Hill in the news a lot this week. And a lot of this was, I would say, generated on Twitter, sort of the vacuum between the Super Bowl and the Combine. There's a lot of time and space to fill. And, you know, there are two things on Taysom Hill that I think we all have to remember, okay? Number one, Sean Payton had a month and a half where he could have turned to Taysom Hill as his starting quarterback, and he chose not to. He went with Teddy Bridgewater instead. Number two, he's not that young. He turns 30 this year. And no, like, that's not a result of him struggling early in his career. He was at BYU and did do a Mormon mission, which meant he was older when he came into the pros. But there's just certain things here where, like, I've heard the Steve Young thing. Like, when Steve Young was a backup with the Niners, we knew he was really, really good. I don't know if I see it with Taysom Hill. We'll see. But, is somebody going to be able to give up, is somebody going to be willing to give up a first round pick for him? No. Would there be a motive for the Saints to get it out there that they really love this guy in order to get a pick? Yes. I'm going to put a big we'll see on that one. Takeaway number three, Michael Bidwell said this week that a 17th game won't impact the safety of players. Look, that might be true. You may have studied it. You may have evidence of it. Great. Don't say it. Things are in such a fragile spot constantly between owners and players that, like, just saying something like that can affect the negotiations. There are enough players that don't want to go to 17 games where you say something like that and you're going to push guys further in that direction. And I think hearing him say that and then hearing some of the reaction from players, to me, this is like 100% why they've tried to keep things quiet until now, because things have been really good between the powers that be with the union, the powers that be with the league. I think players are willing to go to a 17th game if there's a financial inducement. And, you know, if they can get that financial inducement now, if a 10-year extension, if it's not an extension, if it's a new deal and they tear up the last year of the old CBA, even better. Like, the way I look at this is, if the players are going to go to 17 games, you're going to have to make it worth their while. They're not motivated to do a deal a year ahead of time unless you give them something. And, you know, the whole thing is right there for you. If you're the league, doing the deal now allows you to work on broadcast. If you start to work on broadcast, you get broadcast done, then you can start to work on gambling. That's good for everybody. So you go to 17 games now. And again, I think 16 is enough, but if you go to 17 games now, that's more money for everyone, which allows the owners to go to broadcast, which makes more money for everyone, which allows the owners then to go to gambling, which means we could have a $300 million cap in a few years. And so there's a lot of good being done here. There's just no need to antagonize players with the idea of throwing a 17th game in the mix. And I don't think that there was any, like, ill will here on Michael Bidwell's part. Like, I don't think that he meant it that way. And I'm sure there is evidence that backs up what he's saying. There's just no need to go there. Takeaway number four. I think Eric Bieniemy should think about taking the Colorado job. And I know that sounds nuts. And I know he's absolutely in position where he should be able to get an NFL head coaching job. And a lot of times those things are sort of a matter of circumstance. Like this year, if you look at the openings, really only one of those jobs to me, like only one of those jobs was really like an open competition that a coordinator could get. The Redskins and Cowboys were always hiring guys with head coaching experience. And they did. The Redskins hired Rivera. The Cowboys hired McCarthy. The Browns, as soon as they decided we're all in on Paul DePodesta, I'm not saying the whole thing was a bag job, but Kevin Stefanski had the inside track. That leaves the Panthers and Giants. Those two teams, one of those two teams was going to hire Matt Rhule. that was just the way it is. And so whichever team didn't hire Matt Rhule, there was going to be the one coordinator opening, and that went to Joe Judge. And so it's sort of an example of how these things can work sometimes. And like, if I'm Eric Bieniemy, you know what I sort of look at here is this is the way that things can go sometimes. And I can go be Bill O'Brien at Penn State. I can go be Matt Rhule at Baylor, where I'm going into a tough situation. And if I can make the most of it in 2 or 3 years, then I become a very, very hot candidate, right? Like Matt Rhule before Baylor, NFL teams liked him. They thought he was interesting when he was at Temple. But going to Baylor really put him over the top. And look what happened. 7 year, $62 million deal with a owner that's got more money than any other owner in the NFL in a manageable market in Charlotte. Like, he's got a great situation now going forward with a lot of control. Same thing with Bill O'Brien in Houston before he went to Penn State. Like, he was getting, like the Jaguars were sniffing around him, right? Like, that was the sort of job he was looking at. He goes to Penn State for 2 years, turns around, boom, all of a sudden, now you see a different looking candidate. Like, Bill O'Brien was seen differently and was a hot candidate in 2014, way hotter than he was in 2012 after 3 years of calling plays in New England, because they'd seen him go into a situation where he had to be the head coach, where it was a difficult situation, had to manage a million different things. And now he's became a very, very attractive candidate. So Bieniemy can wait and the next year sort of roll the dice a little bit. And you know, then that's 1 year further down the line, and then, you know, maybe you get one, but you're not really like, would you be the hottest candidate? I think that's up for debate. If you go to Colorado and crush it for 2 years, which would mean you'd be in the NFL, you know, head coaching cycle just 1 year later, you may have your pick of the jobs. And so I think that there's definitely some benefit that people aren't looking at in going to Colorado. Takeaway number five, my XFL takeaways. I thought the production value of the broadcast was good. I thought the football was good. I thought some of the rules innovations were great. Like the idea of the kickoff, which the NFL has really struggled with over the years, thought that was fantastic. The question for me is going to be like, A, profitability, and that one's obvious. This thing's better funded than the AAF was. B, it's going to be interesting to see as far as how these teams are kept together over the coming weeks. And one thing that I think structurally that you have to look at here, the bonus structure in the XFL, more than half of these guys' salaries are tied to A, being active, and B, winning. And so if a guy is one of the, I believe it's 6 inactives on game day, I think 46 of the 52 are up, that not only means he's out his active bonus, he could also be out a win bonus. And so you're going to have players in each of these locker rooms that are going to be looking at it and say, well, hey, wait a minute. Like more than half my money's gone. That could cause problems. There's the blitzing rules. That's another factor. We already saw a couple quarterbacks get hurt in week one in the XFL. The AAF put in no blitzing rules because there was an acknowledgement there just aren't enough offensive linemen out there, so we need to do what we can to protect them. Are the quarterbacks going to get killed? So those are things I'm going to be looking for going forward. But through week one, a very good start for the XFL. They outrated the AAF. The ratings, actually, just for context sake, they were about what the baseball division round does, about what the second round of the NBA playoffs does. There will be a drop in week two. The hope has to be that the drop won't be quite what the drop was for the AAF last year. All right. And we will get to our special guest right after this. All right, like I said off the top, this offseason had a chance. I'm not going to say it's definitely going to happen, but it has a chance to encompass the most amount of quarterback movement that we've seen in a long, long time. Maybe ever since the start of free agency in the NFL in 1993. And so to discuss all of that, we're going to bring in one of our recurring guests, my buddy, my old buddy from the Sports Hub in Boston. He's now with WPRO in Providence and on CBS Sports Radio National. Andy Gresh, welcome in.
Hi, Bird. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing great. All right. So here's what I thought this would be the best way to start this exercise.
Okay.
And this will sort of, I think, for the people listening, kind of give you a real sense of how volatile the quarterback situation is across the NFL right now, with a little over a month to go till free agency. First, I'm going to run down the teams that either could be bringing in a new quarterback, have a quarterback contract situation, just something brewing that needs to be addressed now. And then I'll name the quarterbacks that I think will be part of all of this. You ready to go, Gresh?
Let's go, brother. This is going to be a big, expansive conversation.
Okay, so here's what I want you to do, Gresh. I want you to internalize all of it, right? Like, I'm going to go through every one of these team names, every one of these quarterback names, and then when I finish, I want you to give me the first thing that pops in your head, okay?
I got you. That's a nice way of Bert folks telling me, shut up and let me get through this.
Okay, so here we go. All right, we'll start with the teams, all right? New England Patriots, Miami Dolphins, Cincinnati Bengals, Indianapolis Colts, Jacksonville Jaguars, Tennessee Titans, Las Vegas Raiders, Los Angeles Chargers, Dallas Cowboys, Carolina Panthers, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Okay, players. Tom Brady, Philip Rivers, Nick Foles, Teddy Bridgewater, Taysom Hill, Jameis Winston, Cam Newton, Marcus Mariota, Ryan Tannehill, Dak Prescott, Case Keenum, Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, Tua Tagovailoa. Gresh, go.
Wow. All right. So I guess we'll start at the old top here. Do you want to go teams or players first?
I mean, like, I just want the first thing that pops in your head. When I run off that list of teams and I run off that list of players, what's the first thing that pops in your head?
Is that there are way too many quarterbacks for the jobs that will be open this year in the NFL. And when you think about,
weird, right? Like, that was sort of where I was going, that, like, supply never outpaces demand in the NFL
at
that position.
But don't you think, though, and part of the reason that we're at this spot is because of there are teams at the crossroads, right? Dolphins, the Bengals, the Jaguars, who spent a lot of money last offseason. You mentioned the Raiders in there. I know they'd love to make a change, but you have the Chargers and the Buccaneers. So I think you have the teams in the top 10 who have to decide what they want to be. Do they want to go young, for Tampa, for instance? Do they bring back Winston? Do they go with a veteran in Rivers because they were good enough to think that they might be in it next year? So to me, Bert, there's two classifications of teams. There are the ones who have to get a young quarterback. Right. Then there are the teams who would love to improve their situation. And then there are the teams that just straight up need a quarterback. And I know that, say, the Patriots could fit into two of those categories. But when I look at Bengals, Dolphins, Jaguars, Chargers, Buccaneers, those five teams, to me, are going to be picking from the young players that you mentioned. And that's where I think we got to start, because don't you think if you're going to draft a guy in the top 10, you're not going to be as active in free agency on the high-end quarterback market?
And it's funny because I didn't even mention two of the names there, which is, I mean, like, you've got Andy Dalton, who's probably going to be available because of where the Bengals are from a quarterback standpoint. And then I mentioned the Raiders. Well, Derek Carr could be available. Well, let's go through the young quarterback teams first, okay?
So
the Bengals are drafting first overall. The Dolphins are drafting fifth overall. The Chargers are drafting sixth overall. The Panthers, and I didn't even mention them, I don't think. Did I?
No.
I forgot to mention. Oh, no, I had the
Actually,
Panthers.
No, they're on the list, yeah.
The Panthers are drafting seventh overall. Jacksonville's ninth, and the Raiders are 12th, the Colts are 13th, and the Bucs are 14th.
And so, don't forget the Redskins are in there too, with at least a decision to make on maybe where they're going to go with a new coach in there. I think it's Dwayne Haskins, but you understand the essence of me bringing that up, because if somebody's horny for a quarterback, the Redskins might be willing to trade out.
Right, that's where they're going, and then the Redskins have to make a choice. Do we want to just stick and take the generational defensive prospect, Chase Young, or do we want to come away from the first 20 minutes of the draft with a boatload of capital? And so here's the question, though, okay? So I know there's an assumption that Joe Burrow is going to go first overall. We'll see whether or not, like, this winds up ending in a trade demand or something like that. I mean, that could happen down the line. If we're operating on the premise that Joe Burrow goes first overall, would you feel comfortable taking Tua or Herbert with the second or third pick?
Yeah, I'm not so sure on Tua because of the injury. Like before the catastrophic injury last year, I would have been all in on him being the number one pick. But if you're going to make him the face of your franchise, you need to know that that guy physically is going to be able to hold up. He would be the one guy, Bert, that I would consider it for. But if Joe Burrow doesn't want to go to the Cincinnati Bengals, then the Bengals are in a bit of a tough spot. There's a part of me that says, screw it, draft him, then trade him, or draft him and try to talk him into it. But I don't know. It seems to be Burrow with a bullet. And then maybe Tua, if the injury is okay. But to me, Justin Herbert is third of those three guys, and that isn't even really a big question in my mind.
I'm always concerned, too, about a quarterback like Herbert where the knock is that he's raw, and yet he was a four-year starter, right? Mm-hmm. Like the knock is his footwork isn't there. He doesn't move quite the way you'd like him to move in the pocket, and he's inconsistent. And you know what it sort of reminds me of? In a way, and I'm not saying he's this guy because I think he's better than this guy, but it sort of reminds me of Blake Bortles. And if you remember when Blake Bortles came out, like mm-hmm. you could pull wow plays out of the library, right? And I had a coach say this to me, and I thought it was such an interesting way of putting it. He said, you see everything you need to see. It just takes you a lot of tape to get there. And it sort of feels like that's what Herbert is. So I'd be a little worried about taking Herbert that high. Tua, I love as a player, but I'm with you on the injury thing, right? Ooh. Like the injury thing, I mean, let's go down the list, right? So like if you look at the guys who have come into the league like with injury concern at that position in the first round, almost all of them got hurt again. Sam Bradford in 10, Jake Locker in 11, Robert Griffin in 12, Marcus Mariota in 15, Carson Wentz in 16, Deshaun Watson in 17. All of those guys came into the NFL with serious injury concerns. Gresh, what happened to them when they got to the NFL?
They were still injured and never reached their full potential on whole.
A lot of them, right? Like,
yeah.
So like that would be a concern to me. Like, here's the thing, though. If you're the Bengals and you want to trade that pick, wouldn't that increase the value? If Burrow is the cleanest guy and the guy where you're not worried about injury or inconsistency, wouldn't that increase the chance that you get something really good for him?
You would think so, but if Joe Burrow is going to, say, bully his way or Eli Manning his way out of Cincinnati, then does he want to go to, what, Miami? You know, does he think he's right. going to end up in New England or something like that? Like, is Joe Burrow going to be unreasonable?
The good teams have too far to go to get him. That's the problem, right?
Well, I mean,
if you're a good team, you're drafting at the end of the first round, you got too far to go. You can't get up that high.
I don't know. I mean, do you love the guy so much that you dangle a player that Cincinnati might be interested in? You know, is Burrow so good for one of those teams or such a match for one of those teams like we're talking about that it's worth sacrificing something else on your roster as a sweetener to be able to get up there?
And I'll tell you why I think the answer is no. It's not because I don't like Burrow as a player. It's because of what might be coming next year. Like Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields. And Lawrence, I think we all know, is a generational talent, right? And I think Burrow's really good too. But like the idea that waiting could bring Lawrence, I think, could be attractive to some teams. And then Justin Fields, Justin Fields is another one where you look at him and you say, like, if he builds in the momentum he built in 2020 or 2019, like we could be talking about a top two or three pick as well. If you're Joe Burrow, do you consider asking for a trade?
No. These guys have to realize that their legacy can be built by going to one of these teams and finding a way to win. And I understand the knock on Mike Brown and that organization, and there's no question they need to get up with the times, and maybe Joe Burrow ends up sniffing that out a little bit. But when you think about the division that he's going to play in and the notoriety there, if that team can find a way to win the division with Joe Burrow as the starting quarterback – his legend is going to grow, his profile is going to grow, and then he could have the ability to get the hell out of there in a couple of years. I just don't, I mean, everything we've heard about Joe Burrow, Bert, is that he competes, he competes, he competes. He ended up leaving Ohio State, and he went to LSU, and let's be honest, right? You're an Ohio State guy. Did you expect Joe Burrow to end up there of all places? Because I didn't.
No,
I thought,
I mean,
it's a blue blood school.
Normally when guys transfer, they have to transfer down, right? Like, mm-hmm. normally guy, like, transfers out of a school like that, and you do have, like, examples of super blue chip guys, but, I mean, Joe Burrow hadn't played at all. He was a relatively modest recruit, like, so, I mean, yeah, I think it definitely says something about the competitiveness of the kid. I mean, like, Luke Fickell was down the road offering him, you could be the starter at Cincinnati, and he said, no, I want to go to LSU.
So, to me, the competitiveness for this guy, I think that's got to emerge here, and that's what the Bengals are banking on. And, you know, if he forced his way to, say, Miami, is it really going to be that much better? I mean, to me, if I'm Joe Burrow and I'm trying to force my way out, it's either A, I think the Bengals are complete boobs and I need to get the hell out of there, or B, I think I can go somewhere to where maybe I can elevate a team a little bit. Like, for example, what if Tampa and Joe Burrow are a great match? Does Tampa maybe try to sell out to get up there to get him? And does Joe Burrow say, yeah, that's somewhere where I can go, and I think I can do something right away with that coach and that talent?
What about the Chargers?
You know, interesting. I don't know. I mean,
I mean,
and I have had
the
a lot
opportunity.
Of...
I mean, like I almost look at this, like, if you're Burrow, like the Chargers would be like, there would be this opportunity there where you would be like, not only would there be a good team around you, like, now they have to fix the offensive line. The offensive line's a problem, but you'd be throwing to Mike Williams, to Keenan Allen. If they bring him back, Hunter Henry, the defense has got Joey Bosa and Derwin James and Casey Hayward. Like, I look at that, like, that team, and I'm like, okay, so you've got talent around you, so you probably won't have to wait that long to win, and, like, you could be part of the Chargers rebranding themselves in Los Angeles. And if you can win and the Rams aren't winning, like, you have a chance to make a, like, be a difference maker in LA. So I think there is some, I don't know, like, to me, like, there's a little bit of, like, an intangible value there too, right?
Oh, I would think so. And if you're the Chargers, it'd be a perfect world. Now, I don't know what you're hearing. You're the insider. I'm just the opinion guy. We keep hearing that the Chargers could throw $80 million at Tom Brady, guaranteed, to try to get him in there. Or is there anything to this make a trade for Cam Newton and then draft your next guy, use Cam as the ability to sell seats, hope you get a couple more years out of him, and then either flip him as an asset or the young quarterback just pushes him out the door?
Yeah, I mean, like that, like, so Anthony Lynn, if you look at his history and, you know, what I know about him, like, I think he would like a quarterback who can move. And, you know, you look at the quarterbacks they acquired there, both Tyrod Taylor and Easton Stick, who a lot of people don't know, but was the North Dakota State quarterback. Both those guys are mobile, right? And when he was helping run the run game in Buffalo under Rex Ryan, they had Tyrod Taylor there. And even in New York with the Jets, like, because they wanted to put in some of that option stuff, they brought in Tim Tebow. And so, you know, I think Anthony Lynn, like, there's part of him that, like, the idea of having, like, a quote-unquote dual-threat quarterback would appeal to him. So I think there is merit in that.
Now, something does scream to me, you know, Andy Dalton maybe being a fit somewhere along the way here. And is that maybe the kind, yeah, if you do go young there, is that the kind of dude that you look for to bring in to kind of be an Alex Smith-type mentor to somebody?
Well, and so, like, that's why, like, this is where we can bridge this into the Brady discussion, right? Because,
sure,
I do think, like, for a team like New England, you know, I know Andy Dalton doesn't excite you, right? Like, if you've been watching Tom Brady for 20 years. Mm-hmm. But, like, to me, Andy Dalton could be perfect because he's a guy you can bring in. You're under no illusion that he's your future, right? Like, you're under no illusion that he's going to be your quarterback for the next 10 years. He's functional. He can run your offense. He allows you to sort of stay the course as far as what you're doing from a system standpoint. Won't be exactly the same, but allows you to sort of stay the course there, right? And he buys you time. And so what Andy Dalton does, I think, he allows you to sort of tread water so you're not desperate where you have to get the next guy this year. Because I think a lot of times where the biggest mistakes are made is when teams are, like, sort of pigeonholed into a single year and they, all right, we have to get a quarterback this year, right? Like, that's where the Titans were, if you remember, in 2011 when they took Jake Locker. That's where the Vikings were that year when they took Christian Ponder. That's where the Dolphins were in 2012 when they took Ryan Tannehill, because you remember they struck out in Peyton Manning. That's where the Bills were in 2013 when they drafted E.J. Manuel. I think so many times what happens is teams are pigeonholed into a single year and they say, we have to get our quarterback this year. And so what ends up happening is they sort of generate a quarterback prospect that might not be there. And I think Andy Dalton's perfect in that way, in that if you're a team like New England or even a team like the Chargers and you're saying to yourself, we need to make it work right now. We have a team that we like right now that we want to compete to make the playoffs with right now. And we don't want to be pigeonholed into having to take a quarterback in the high in the draft this year. We want to kind of keep throwing darts at it. I think Andy Dalton's almost an ideal guy that you can tread water with for the time being.
I'm with you, and you can live with him as long as you have it in context, and I think you positioned it brilliantly, and it might be the same thing with Derek Carr. If Derek Carr springs free, that might be a guy where it's, all right, I'll give him a 1 or a 2 year look. I know he can come in and be functional, and maybe he's got the ability to pop here under a new system and start to play a better brand of football, considering that apparently the Raiders, they want in on the whole Brady thing as well. I don't know about you, though.
In fact, you know what, Gresh? I'd argue that's what the Raiders are doing right now with Derek Carr. Like, I think Mike Mayock and John Gruden view him, he's a good quarterback, we can win with him, like, and he's perfect because he's on a deal that's affordable and we're out of the guaranteed money, so we can move on whenever we want. And here's the analogy to you, okay? Like, to me, like, having somebody like a Dalton or having somebody like a Derek Carr, like, we got, like, I feel like we got a really good deal on our house. Me and my wife got a really good deal on our house when we bought our house. One of the main reasons why was because we were on a month-to-month lease, okay? And what did that allow us to do? Well, because we were on a month-to-month lease in the city, there was no like end date. So there was no urgency. So we were never going to have our backs up against the wall where it was like, we have to be out by this time or else And so like being on a month to month lease allowed us to sort of look around and figure out what we wanted. Then we could strike whenever we wanted to strike. And there really wouldn't be a financial penalty. I feel like that's what Derek Carr and Andy Dalton can be. They're like the month to month lease, you know, where it's like, we can make this work for now, and then we can pick our spot when we want to go all in. So if we like one of the quarterbacks this year, great. Then we'll go get him this year. If we want to wait and we're not wild about any of the quarterbacks this year, you know what? We'll wait till next year. To me, it's like that's what Derek Carr has been for the Raiders the last couple of years since Gruden got there. He's like their month-to-month lease. And I think Andy Dalton can be that for someone else.
All right, but looking at the Raiders, is it Brady or bust for them? Like, if they don't get Brady, they're going to stick with Carr, aren't they? And that's where I kind of get to in terms of trying to look at the teams and all the seats and how this whole thing could end up with these teams going young. To me, if the Raiders blow it up, it feels like they're either going to draft a guy, like you said, and keep Carr, or to get rid of, or it would be to get Brady, they'd have to get rid of Carr. And that might be the only real reason they would get rid of him.
Well, if they, the thing that so the Raiders are, right now, I don't know if they're in a position to get one of the top three. I tend to think, like, I might be wrong about this, but I tend to think, like, whoever's in the first group of quarterbacks is going to go in the top 10 or so picks most years, right? And to me, like, the drop-off is after. So you have Burrow, Tua, Herbert, and I think those three are probably the top three guys, and then there's a drop-off after that. And so it goes, I think, from those three guys, then you're into, like, the Jacob East and Jordan Love, like Jake Fromm, like that group, right? Jordan Love is probably going to be the first one to go with those, but
correct.
Like, so normally, I think like normally I would say wherever that cliff is, wherever like the tier one to tier two cliff is, whoever's on tier one is probably going to go in the top 10 just because of the scarcity of the position. And so I don't think the Raiders are drafting quite high enough to get one of those guys without moving up, but they do have capital. So they've got the 12th pick and the 19th pick. The 19th pick, of course, is the last kind of vestige of the Khalil Mack deal. So they would have to really love someone, is what I'm trying to say. You know what I mean? Like, they would have to really, like,
Bryce Love at 12 type situation for them to take a top of the second tier type guy. But to your point, it's the whole, if they love him, they've proven they're not afraid to draft anybody.
That's actually a great point you brought up there, because they would have to love a guy. It's either they love a guy enough on tier two to take him 12th or 19th, or they love a guy enough to package those two picks and move up for him, right?
There you go. Yep.
Right.
I could totally buy that. Now, what about the Buccaneers? Because to me, they're going to be in a very similar spot, right?
Yeah.
They got a top 10 pick. They got a quarterback that's a turnover machine. And I think the head coach is going to be there for a couple more years. Like, I know Jason Light, it was almost like they were on life support. I don't know what to make of that situation. And that could end up being a big one, because even you and I have talked about, you know, it's not ridiculous to think that Tom Brady couldn't fit in there if he really wanted to.
So, like, they're eight. So, to me, like, I like, so you have a coach who, and I'm going to have to look up BA's age, but I think he's, what, mid-60s?
I want to say Arians is 66, is my guess.
I want to say 66. I'll look it up. Okay, so he is 67. So he turned 67 in October. Jason Lightson is going to be in his seventh year as general manager. They still haven't made the playoffs under him.
Right.
So, like, that would create some tension there. I think what further creates tension there is the sort of the state of the roster. And, like, you've got a lot of guys who are either well-paid or coming close to the end of their rookie deals. And, you know, you can go down the line. I mean, Donovan Smith and Ali Marpet on their offensive line, O.J. Howard at tight end, Mike Evans and Chris Godwin at receiver. Like, there's talent there, right? Even on defense, they've got some players. Like, you know, Levante David's a very good linebacker. You know, they've got some horses there. Now, it doesn't mean they don't need work, but they've definitely got some horses there. The question I would have with Brady is he a fit? Because if you look at BA's offense, right, over the years, BA's offense is one where the quarterback gets hit a lot because they send a lot of guys out into the route and they're throwing downfield, and it's an offense that strikes downfield a lot. We've seen Brady do that in the past. I think the 07 offense was probably a little bit more like that because they had Moss and Stallworth and they were going downfield more. But is that what's best for Brady? Or is Brady best playing point guard and playing in an offense that's putting together 8 and 10 and 12 play drives? Like, that'd be my question, is do you think that Arians and Brady would be a fit more so than the situation being a fit for Brady, like from a player standpoint and everything else?
I would have to think that Bruce Arians would be willing to adapt whatever he would need to get a guy that isn't going to throw 30 interceptions every year, because all of what you said is very, very true, but God, you just can't live with those kind of turnovers from the quarterback spot. It's amazing they were as successful as they were this year with Jameis Winston in their quarterback. And I think what you bring up, though, is a reason to probably cross Tampa off the list. However, what direction they go is going to be very interesting, because do they just bring Winston back for one more year and take another kick at the can with everybody there and all the talent on that roster, or do they start to kind of look ahead a little bit, because they're going to have choices? And that's the hard part to me of figuring out the Jaguars and the Buccaneers. And I know we haven't belabored the Jaguars very much, but they spent a ton of money on Nick Foles in the offseason. They got to kind of figure out where they're going to go. And then there's like the Cowboys and, you know, the Colts in the middle of
and
the road teams.
We haven't talked about the Cowboys much, just because I assume like Dak's going to be back there.
So why don't we work this? Do you believe the Dolphins are going to take a quarterback?
I do.
Okay.
I'm a little reluctant because I don't think. Look, I think Chris Greer has done a nice job building up assets. You know, like, I think Flores did a great job last year. Like, I just think that they've been so well reasoned and patient that unless there's a guy there that they really love, they aren't going to move for him. And I don't know that, like, Tua is going to fall to them. Here's the way I see it playing out. Like, I think Burrow goes first. Chase Young probably goes second. And then I think the Lions have to make a decision. Do we hold an auction for the third pick, or do we just take somebody like Jeff Okuda? And I think, you know, what winds up happening, Isaiah Simmons, whoever you want with that third pick. So I think what happens is the Lions probably wind up putting that pick up for auction, assuming one of the quarterbacks gets hot enough where somebody's willing to trade up for him. And so then it would be like, if you want to go get Tua, you better really love him. You know, like if you want to go get Tua, you're going to have to give up capital to go and get him. And I think that that scenario could absolutely happen.
So Dolphins, Bengals are off the list. As we keep working down, there's the Chargers, right? Yeah. So they're open-ended right now. Let's just leave that one open.
They're in play.
And do you think Cam Newton gets traded from the Panthers? Because there's another team where what do they do? What direction do they go? It feels like they're just in for a big reboot this year.
Yeah, and I've talked to the owner a couple times about this, and he said to me exactly what he said publicly the other day, which is there's no decision to be made until he's healthy. I don't know. Like, if you're saying that now, like, if you're really hell-bent on keeping him, wouldn't you just be saying, like, well, you know, he's hurt right now. We're working through that, but he's our guy. Like, they haven't said that.
And that's got to be concerning. We know this is the year for them to get out from underneath Cam. It makes total sense for them, and if they're going to do it now.
And does Cam want to keep playing? I know that sounds crazy, right? Like, but does Cam want to keep playing?
I think Cam is ready for version two of his career. The first one was the guy who started to revolutionize the game a little bit, bring more quarterback running in there. Is Cam Newton going to look at himself and say, hey, listen, man, I'm a dart thrower, but I'm breaking down. I've got to get better at actually playing the position of quarterback the way it's played at the NFL level without the running game mixed in.
So, and I think that that's where it was sort of like what he's facing isn't unlike what like Ben Roethlisberger faced. And, you know, Ben Roethlisberger played for Bruce Arians, and he played that kind of style where he was scrambling around. He was throwing downfield a lot. He was taking a lot of hits. And Todd Haley came in 2012 and said, no, we have Antonio Brown, Mike Wallace, and Emmanuel Sanders here. I don't want you to take those hits. I want you to go out there, and I want you, I'm going to use that term again, play point guard, right? And I want the ball out of your hands quick, and this is going to preserve you, and this is going to wind up in the long run extending your career, and it worked. And so I think that's the point that Cam's at. My question with Cam, and this is like sort of just, I mean, like, look, this is sort of tea leaves. Like, one thing I know about Cam is that, like, he's always been able to physically dominate, which is remarkable. Like, even at the NFL level, he's been able to physically dominate. He's different than everybody else, right? And I think it's very hard for athletes who are like that to hit the second phase of their career. And I think that's why, like, Terrell Owens and Randy Moss struggled when those traits left them, right? And why it was really – those guys could never – like transition to becoming complementary pieces. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And like, can Cam transition from being the guy who was physically dominant out there to something else? And I think that's a hard thing, like not just physically, that's a hard thing psychologically to do. And so like, I think that's a real question, you know, like, does he want to do that? Does he want to reinvent himself? And, you know, I think he keeps playing, but like, I just, there's part of me that thinks like there's going to be a new reality for him, and that's going to be difficult.
And it's interesting because a healthy Cam would fit into a couple of different places. And I think very interestingly, quite honestly, if he were completely healthy, man, he would take Tennessee to another level given what they asked Ryan Tannehill to do, right?
Oh,
I mean, he would fit into perfect as to what they do.
My God, can you imagine a backfield with Cam Newton and Derrick Henry coming at you?
Right. And so the size would be an issue. You would have somebody who sort of fits that scheme. All right. You and I were talking about this before. Where are the Colts at? Because, dude, and I, again, living in New England, we've been through so many, like Boston Red Sox, Scott Boris, you know, ooh, there's a mystery team, right? The whole, there's someone lurking in the weeds. Are the Indianapolis Colts the team that is stealthily lurking to upgrade their quarterback spot in a big way? Because you know as well as I do, somebody is sitting on, I'm going to go make a move for a quarterback that no one is looking at, and the Colts might be that team.
And the Colts have, like, a good young base, too. I mean, like, things didn't go their way this year. And I think it's hard to really blame the guys. I mean, they lost Andrew Luck, what, like 3 weeks before the season started?
Oh, God.
So it was, like, an impossible situation. I think Frank Reich and those guys actually managed it fairly well, given the circumstances. I think what the Colts would like to do, and this is just, again, like, this is just my sense of it. there are a couple of guys out there that do have background with their coaching staff. One's Philip Rivers, the other's Nick Foles, right? So Rivers is very close with Frank Reich and Nick Sirianni from having worked with them in San Diego. And Nick Foles, of course, played for Frank Reich in Philadelphia when Foles won the Super Bowl. And so there's part of me that thinks that what would be ideal for Chris Ballard and those guys is to find somebody who can steer the ship for the time being and give themselves a year or two to find the long-term answer. Because I do think that, like, if you look at the makeup of their roster, the job they've done drafting guys the last couple of years, there's a lot of talent in that building now. Like, that roster is starting to get in really good shape. The thing is, it was built around Andrew Luck, right? Like, so, like, now you take that piece out, that's really significant. And so I think just finding a way where they can buy themselves a year or two to find the next guy while they continue to build the rest of the roster would be ideal for them. So, that could be one of the quarterbacks this year. That could be, you know, that could be Justin Fields or Trevor Lawrence or someone next year. But I think, like, for the Colts, like, the ideal would be, if this makes sense, finding somebody who can buy them a year or two to find the right answer. And it's sort of the same thing as my treading water thing, where you would have, again, like a Rivers or a Foles come in, a guy who's got some know-how in what you do, and, like, that guy would come in, be plenty competent, play the position well, run the offense, keep everybody else on track. You wouldn't be, like, messing with the other 10 guys in the huddle because you wouldn't be changing the system, and that would just kind of get you to a place where you find the next guy.
If Jacksonville traded Nick Foles, and I know you have all this intel on your little laptop there. I'm just a rube who looks it up on the internet. You're talking about $33.8 million of dead cap money if Foles were to be traded from Jacksonville. So from that end, it's almost a non-starter in terms of Nick Foles being a match in Indianapolis. But I think, Bert, a part of what we've done here in this exercise is – you know, we named all these teams. We've talked about almost all of them. And then there is the whole carousel, right? Rivers, Bridgewater. But is Bridgewater tied into Breeze? Does Breeze walk away? And then, you know, there's so many moving parts with the older quarterbacks who can still play that it really causes you to pull your hair out. But, Bert, I'm thinking that Robert Kraft at the end of the day is thinking to himself, there's really only going to be one other suitor for Tom Brady that would be serious, and that would be the Chargers, because we know that they can pay. And I don't know about you, and I haven't talked about this, but the report is out recently that Robert Kraft thinks, hey, Brady's going to end up coming back to us. And I think the strategy is it's a merry-go-round, and there's not enough horses for everybody. And if you go by Brady's history, he's always caved. And unless somebody on the first day of free agency overturns the apple cart, I'm sure Robert Kraft is sitting there thinking he's going to come back to us in some way, shape, or form. Maybe he's dreaming.
So is there like a Milton and Office Space risk here then? Where you push the guy so far, you know,
now he's
working out of the storage closet. Before you know it, the building's burned down.
No question. I think there's, yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, you've just pushed it a little too far.
We know that Belichick has always been a guy who's been like, go deal shop and see what's out there, and then we can figure it out. It's a little different with Brady because there are teams that could legitimately snag the guy. But we also haven't talked about this. Is there one of the people on this list, right? Brady, Rivers, Bridgewater, Hill would be out, but Winston, Cam, Mariota, Tannehill, that New England might look at and say, I give Teddy Bridgewater X money to come in here to see if it works, because he might be another one of those guys, Bird, who might have to take another one-year bridge deal, because which of those teams that we mentioned would be ready to sink their teeth and invest in that guy?
Well, if I'm New England, right? Like, if I'm New England, like, if Brady's gone, I'm pulling every lever. And you know what that means? That means I'm pulling the lever of bringing Jared Stidham back. I'm pulling the veteran lever, whether it's a stopgap like a Dalton or a Bridgewater. It might be a reclamation project like a Mariota. And maybe you think you can do it Mariota what Tennessee did with Ryan Tannehill last year, mm-hmm. right? So I'm doing that. I'm pulling the veteran lever. I'm pulling the incumbent lever. And I'm also going to be pulling the rookie lever. And I just tell you the two great examples of this to me of it working is Seattle and what Pete Carroll and John Schneider did. And they went through Matt Hasselbeck, Tavares Jackson, Charlie Whitehurst, Matt Flynn to get to Russell Wilson. The Eagles in 2017, they signed Sam Bradford back. They went out and they got Chase Daniel. Collectively, those two cost $25 million a year, and they trade up twice for Carson Wentz. Well, no one remembers all of that stuff, right? Why don't they remember that? Because they got it right in the end, right? Because they kept pulling levers. They kept throwing darts at the dartboard. And if I'm the Patriots and I'm saying goodbye to Brady, that's the approach that I'm employing. I'm throwing darts. I'm just continuing to throw darts. And you know what another great example of it is, Gresh? In 2008, after Brett Favre announced he was going to retire, do you know what the Packers did?
That's when they started drafting guys behind Rodgers again, right?
They drafted two quarterbacks that year, mm-hmm. right? And I think a lot of people are like, whoa, like, do they not believe in Rodgers? Because they drafted Brian Brohm in the second round and Matt Flynn in the seventh round. Well, no, it was because as much as they liked Rodgers, they weren't sure because they hadn't seen him in real game action for an extended period of time. And so, like, okay, like, we love Rodgers, but we're going to give ourselves some insurance. So I think if the Patriots are in that situation, they got to do the same sort of thing.
Who is going to, or let me rephrase, what team is going to cause the domino effect? Like, is it the first move, Bert, that ends up sending everything into kind of, all right, everybody's got to go get their guy mode? Like, I'm wondering just sort of how, you know, what is going to be the first domino to fall, and then will it be a massive ripple effect, or will these moves still just kind of trickle in as we go along during free agency?
I think everything hinges on Brady. Like, I think so much of what's going to happen is going to hinge on what Tom Brady does. And what'll be really interesting is if he insists on doing a tour, right? And this goes back to 2012 with Peyton Manning, and I covered that thing from the beginning to the end. And if you remember, there were a number of teams involved, right? And because of the rules, you can't start your free agent tour until free agency begins. And in the NFL, free agency moves fast. So 24, 48 hours, the first wave of free agents, usually they're all gone. Well, what happens if, you know, you've got one player who's sort of holding the process hostage, right? So that's where I think this game of musical chairs really crystallizes. If Brady decides, I want to go on a tour, well, all right, like if you remember what happened with Peyton Manning in 2012, the Dolphins were involved. They wind up drafting Ryan Tannehill after that. The Tennessee Titans were involved. They had Jake Locker on the roster. But you might remember the Arizona Cardinals were involved too, and they were all in. What happened with them? They had to go into the next year with Ryan Lindley and John Skelton as their quarterbacks, and everyone wound up getting fired. And so you think about like that, right? Like, so how many teams are going to be willing to push the pause button on their entire offseason and say, we're willing to wait for Brady, it's worth it, and maybe miss out on all of these other guys? Or do these teams that Brady want to visit, do they get antsy? And so maybe there's a place that he wants to sign where that team can't wait. They press for an answer. He can't give it to them. They sign someone else. And now that option's off the table for Brady. That's what's so fascinating about it is that everybody thinks like, well, yeah, like Brady can afford to take this big free agent tour. Can he? I don't know. Because it's this gigantic game of musical chairs. And I think teams and players are going to be paranoid that they're going to be the odd one left, that they're going to be the odd man out, whether it's a team left without a good quarterback option or a player left without a shot at a starting job.
And if Brady is ultimately thinking in the back of his mind, I'm going to go take these tours. Oh, yeah. And by the way, New England will wait for me. That to me is going to be the real fascinating piece of all of this is that how quickly will Bill Belichick move on if Tom Brady decides I'm going to go out there and look? Like, is there that
plan
in place?
Well, you remember Welker, right? What happened with Wes Welker in 2013? Mm-hmm. Wes went and got offers from the Broncos and Titans, came back, and the Patriots were already down the road with Danny Amendola.
So might this turn into Bill Belichick saying, hey, you're a free agent. I didn't know if you were coming back or not. I had to go do what I had to do, and sort of having some plausible deniability and shoving this thing along a little bit and maybe finally getting Brady out the door, which, even though Belichick respects the hell out of the guy, he's a franchise builder, and I'm sure he's thinking, I want to get this right for years to come, not just this year.
How crazy is that? That, right. Tom freaking Brady. Like, if he were, there's the possibility out there that he comes back and there's not a place for it. Like, it's just, yeah. I mean, like, that's why I say it feels like this is sort of an offseason that has potential. And I'm not saying it absolutely will play out this way, but this offseason has potential to be unprecedented as far as quarterback movement goes.
Bro, this is kaboom offseason. It's going to be explosive. There's going to be controversy. There's going to be finger pointing. And in the end, there's going to be a good quarterback that's going to be left standing there who's going to have to take maybe quarters on the dollar, let's say, in terms of what they thought they might have been able to get just to be able to have a job next year. And that also will be fascinating as well, especially if it's a veteran quarterback. You know, let's say nobody jumps on Ryan Tannehill, right? And he's the last guy out there. Given the way he played last year, he's proven he can be effective in that kind of Nick Foles sort of backup role. And does that guy, once everything settle, end up finding himself a plum gig somewhere as a backup quarterback with a team that he might be able to win with again if he doesn't go back to the Titans?
Gresh, controversy, finger pointing, fighting over money? That sounds like our business.
It really does, man. Listen, the old wrestling guy, Eric Bischoff, who ran WCW, wrote a book, and he's 1,000,000% right. Controversy creates cash, and the NFL will not only be handing out a lot of cash to quarterbacks, there's going to be a ton of controversy this offseason, and I am here for all of it. Let's freaking go, man. I can't wait for you to go to the combine, and there's going to be that quarterback that everybody gets all horny for, and, oh, we're going to start to hear the other name, and this team loves this guy and that guy, and the posturing's going to begin, and imagine if Joe Burrow says, screw this, I'm not going to Cincinnati. I don't like ribs. I don't like chili. I don't want to go there. Oh my God. This could be for a guy like you covering the league, this could be the proverbial orgy of stories all offseason.
Let's freaking go. I'm pumped for it. Hey, Gresh, I could talk to you about this for another 3 hours, I think. So we got to cut it off here, but I always appreciate you coming out. We'll have you back sometime soon.
You're the best, buddy.
All right, thanks to Gresh. Always great catching up with him, and that was wild. That was exactly what I wanted. I wanted to be all over the place on that, and we were all over the place on that. So because we haven't as aggressively promoted the mailbag portion of the podcast lately, we do have some questions we want to get to. We're going to try to get back into doing that more consistently, where we're doing it the way that we were doing it through the email and through the voicemail. But we're going to do sort of a mishmash this week, where I'm going to bring in our executive producer, Shelby Royston, to ask me some questions. Then I'm going to answer four of your questions. It won't be a six-pack. I'm going to answer four of your questions from Twitter. So, Shelby, bring you in now. I don't have the email address right in front of me. It's BreerMailbag@gmail.com. What was the voicemail number? Do we have that we can give to the public?
We have that here. That number is 201-596-4346.
Awesome. Okay, so that's how you get to us. We love when you give us the voicemail. Email's good too. Shelby, question number one.
From Moose. Albert, I would be shocked if Robert Kraft lets Tom Brady walk in free agency. Assuming he stays in New England, what roster improvements do you see Belichick making in the offseason to help bolster the offense for next year?
I don't think there's any question that they're going to have to do something at the skill positions. And I think the question becomes what position it's at. My guess would be they go all in on fixing tight end the way that they went all in on fixing tight end in 2010, the last time they sort of had that pull the Band-Aid off year. And so, like, I think you look at guys like Cole Kmet from Notre Dame, maybe in the veteran market, somebody like Austin Hooper. Like, doing that, I think, sort of changes the dynamic, takes some of the heat off of Julian Edelman as the number one receiver. And then you hope that N'Keal Harry comes along at one of the outside spots. But I think the offensive line could use a player or two, and you've got some guys in the pipeline. Really, I think what Brady's looking for is some some better skill position players, and I think you can do that effectively at the tight end position this offseason. Question number two, Shelby.
From David, given the Bolin family squabbling over the controlling interest in the Broncos, what do you think happens from here?
Well, I know what the team would like. What the brass there would like is for the daughter, Brittany, who is apparently very, very well-respected at the league office, somebody who's done a rotation at the league office, who's worked in finance, who has a degree from Notre Dame. They would like Brittany to take the role as the controlling owner. And, of course, this doesn't mean that she owns the team and that she has – it just means she's kind of the voice of the team, and that's – sort of the way NFL ownership works is that there's always got to be somebody out front. You know, John Mara in New York, his siblings, like there are a bunch of his siblings that work for the team, but he was sort of the guy who's put out up front. Same thing with the Hunts in Kansas City. Clark Hunt, he's the guy who was put out in front to succeed his father, Lamar, as the controlling owner. And so that's sort of where the squabble's been here. I think that one of two things happens. Either Brittany Bolin becomes the controlling owner and there's an amicable resolution to this, or the team winds up being sold. So I think it's probably Brittany or bust. Question number three, Shelby.
From Arif, with the way the draft is set up, unless there is a trade up, the number one overall pick is going to a bad team. This should not be a surprise to anyone. Why is there such a big deal being made about Joe Burrow refusing to go to the Bengals? I don't remember hearing anybody trash the Bucks and saying Jameis should pull in Eli or with the Browns and Baker in 2018.
So I think that with, you know, I think it just sort of depends on the individual player, his situation, you know, like the people around him, his history. Like he's obviously, he grew up near that team. And then, you know, the people who are advising him. And he's got, like, close to him now, Jordan Palmer's the guy who's doing his pre-draft run-up, right? So you got Jordan Palmer there as part of it. And Jordan is, you know, the brother of Carson Palmer. And Carson Palmer, obviously, was a Bengals quarterback, the last Bengals player to go first overall. And, you know, he wound up forcing his way out 8 years into his career. And, of course, Jordan played for the Bengals, too. And so there's just that history there. He's from there. He understands the organization. The organization's had its troubles. I think a lot of this is sort of circumstantial. And so it'll be interesting to see the way this plays out. I would say the one thing that you want to pay attention to here, like Zach Taylor has a relationship, not a close relationship, but has a prior relationship with Jim Burrow. Jimmy Burrow is Joe's dad. Jimmy Burrow was a coach at Nebraska, and Joe and his brothers grew up part of their lives in Nebraska. Zach Taylor was a quarterback at Nebraska. So I think the Bengals' best hope here is to sort of harvest that relationship between the Burrow family and Zach Taylor. Maybe that fixes it. Maybe it doesn't. Question number four, Shelby.
From Mark, assuming the Bengals draft Burrow, which team do you think is likely to go after Tua?
So I think the two teams that I would watch in that regard are the Miami Dolphins and Los Angeles Chargers. Both would be in striking distance of a trade up. Like I said with Gresh, the possibility exists that the Lions are kind of in that catbird seat where you have Burrow going first, you have Chase Young going second, and then there's sort of an auction for the third pick. The Lions would be in a good situation there to maybe create some competition between the Dolphins and Chargers. If both those guys like Tua Tagovailoa enough to trade up for him, and if both those teams' doctors clear him. So that's our four questions from Shelby. Really quick, I'm going to fire through four questions from the readers because I did put the call out for questions on Twitter. Question number one, on the Twitter side from Juan Camilo Palaukis, that's at JukaPa10, possible tight ends in the market and draft for New England. I mentioned this earlier. I'll go through it really quick again. Austin Hooper, Hunter Henry would be options in the veteran market. I think both guys would fit New England. If you look at the draft, there are really three guys, I think, that you could take a look at. Cole Kmet from Notre Dame would be somebody you probably have to get in round one or round two, but I think he would fit in New England. And then Thaddeus Moss, the son of Randy Moss, which would be interesting for obvious reasons. Jared Pinkney, the tight end from Vanderbilt, would be the other one. Question number two from the Twitter side, that's from Archer. It's at the actual Archer. Seriously, what the hell are the Jaguars doing? I think right now they're all in on Doug Marrone and Dave Caldwell. And for right now, blame for the last 2 years has been directed at Tom Coughlin. And you can actually go back and look at what the way that the Yannick Ngakoue situation was handled for evidence of that. Yannick had started, was told to wait for the negotiations to begin. He waited all the way till July. They negotiated for maybe a week. Things went off the rails when Yannick, when Coughlin basically said, you know, this is where we're at. That's it. Kind of created tension between the team and the player. That caused that to blow up. Then you have the Ramsey thing after it. What the ownership in Jacksonville believes right now is that Tom Coughlin was the root of a lot of the problems the last 2 years. So it's going to be on Doug Marrone and Dave Caldwell now to prove that to be the truth. If it's not the truth, then those guys could be gone after 2020. Question number three on the Twitter side from Matt Sedlesick. That's at @Matt_Seds. What do you think the best solution for the Bears at quarterback is for next season? Look, they've invested in Mitch Trubisky, so I think the best thing for them would be doing something like what the Titans did this year, where they had Marcus Mariota, who was sort of on his last legs as the quote-unquote franchise quarterback in Tennessee. They bring in Ryan Tannehill as sort of a reclamation project to compete against him, and Ryan Tannehill winds up beating out Marcus Mariota and plays really well. You see the first round talent there. He's able to get him to the AFC Championship game. I think like Mariota could be that guy in Chicago. Maybe it's a more veteran guy like an Andy Dalton, but you bring in somebody to compete with Mitch Trubisky, and if he beats him out, God bless him. If not, you probably get a better performance out of Trubisky from having created that tension around the position. Finally, last question of the week, question number four from Cam Shirky. That's @big_shirk. How do you think the Raiders quarterback situation unfolds? I think they hold on to Derek Carr as a placeholder. Again, I made the month-to-month lease analogy. I think he's sort of the guy that you feel like you can win with, but you're always sort of out there looking for an upgrade. It's a good situation to be in from a team-building standpoint as long as the kid who's in that position can handle it. I wouldn't be surprised for them if they sort of kick the tires on maybe competition. For Derek Carr, maybe they take a flyer on somebody like a Jameis Winston or a Ryan Tannehill if Tannehill is out in Tennessee. And then, you know, I think the possibility exists that they go big game hunting with somebody in the draft or with Tom Brady. So lots of options on the table for the Raiders, which is a good position for the team to be in. Appreciate you guys coming out. As always, we love your feedback. We want your feedback. We'll take your feedback whenever we can get your feedback. So you can get to me on social media. You can get to me on Twitter, @AlbertBreer, on Facebook, @AlbertRBreer, on Instagram, @Albert_Breer. And the offseason's here, so our schedule is sort of wound down a little bit, but this is going to be a busy offseason, so you'll hear from us plenty. My podcast is soon going to move to Monday mornings. I'm not sure when it's going to be, but it's going to happen eventually. Jenny and Connor, the Weekside podcast, will be on Wednesdays. We'll have sort of a rotating podcast on Fridays. You can get all of that on the MMQB podcast feed. And then on top of that, there's always the MMQB news feed, which is going to be moving to mornings. We'll be doing it there. We'll have breaking news there as well. And both feeds, the MMQB news feed, the MMQB NFL podcast feed, get them on Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, Apple Podcasts. Subscribe, download, wherever you guys get your shows. Same time next week. I'll see you guys then.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Finish your outdoor wood projects with Cabot Premium Wood Care Products. Australian Timber Oil is an exterior stain that provides maximum penetration, durability, and water repellency, making it ideal for decks, siding, outdoor furniture, and more. Save big money at Menards on Cabot Premium Wood Care Products. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.